Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. The Monday morning edition of the Rob Brown Show is on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate. Welcome in, all you beautiful people. Great to have you as we get rocking and rolling through the four most electrifying hours in sports talk entertainment that you're going to find anywhere. Anytime, I am Rob Brown. Joining me, as always, the man in charge of this and every radio show you've ever enjoyed for more than a few seconds, the great one Lonzo in the building as well.
And hi.
What a day we have got lined up for you today. A million things to get to. NBA Finals game numero dos goes the way of the Oklahoma City Thunder at the crib. So now we're split up at a game apiece, taking it back from the OKC to the IND for game three and a couple of travel days in the middle. So we get a few minutes to let this one sit and marinate. Lonzo.
Come on. They're not travel days. This is so they can stretch it out as far as they possibly can.
I mean, there's a travel day, and then there's the normal number of days between games.
Uh-huh. You don't think this year that there are more space in between games?
There's not.
Thursday to Sunday, and there was no travel?
The NBA Finals, they always have more. Here's what happened, because I realized this. Cody Decker and I had this conversation on Saturday because he was kind of having the same complaint. And I said, here's the issue. The issue is we just went through effectively 4 weeks where we had basketball for like the first two series. We had multiple games every night. And then it went to alternating games every night. And then it went to like game, night off, game, night off. It's the same number of days between games as we've ever had. It's just that because we're coming off of a stretch of a month where we had multiple playoff games every day, and then we had at least a game every other day, or game, day off, game, day off. Now with the same number of days and in the same slate, the same schedule that we've always had for the finals, we built our tolerance to nights off up. Like, we built our tolerance up, and now we're in the crash period. Because, like, I got to wait 3 days for another game.
Yeah,
same as you always have. It just doesn't feel that way.
Yeah, I thought it was every other day. And when the series is for the two games that are at home or the three that are at home, and then an extra day for travel when they go back to the other place. I don't remember it being an extra day when they're at home.
It's as far as not even as far as I know, the NBA Finals have the same number of days between them. It's just that we're coming off a stretch where we had so much gosh dang basketball that it was it feels like it doesn't. But look, I mean, if these games, you know what? I'm not even going to say that. Game one was one of the most electrifying NBA Finals games of all time. Even though it did have 58 and some change minutes where one team was beating the crap out of the other team, it still ended with this incredible moment. Lonzo had, and it's early in the day, but Lonzo had the best take on this game from last night because I'm going to keep it a buck. I didn't watch the game last night. I went to bed in the time period of a responsible adult. So I didn't watch the game last night. I got up this morning, and I was in here. I was in this building at 3:30 this morning, sitting over at the computer, and I had the, like, YouTube people will pull all the commercials out and all the dead time out, and they'll have every play, but, like, none of the fluff. And I have to say, as exhilarating as game one felt, if I was going to miss a game, last night was the game to miss. And Lonzo, when he came in, we were having the conversation, and he's like, yeah, I floated through some of it, didn't really log all the way in. And he said it was a blowout. It never really felt like Indy was going to be in it. And I said, yeah, but didn't we feel that way about game one? And then Tyrese did Tyrese stuff. And what was a game for most of it, that it felt like Indy was just out of it, it turned out to be this electrifying finish. Didn't we have that same feel about last night? And Zoe said no, because in game number one, even though the Pacers were trailing most of the time, it felt like there were some bad bounces of the basketball here. There were some bad bounces of the basketball there. There were a couple of rebounds up off the top of the rim that went the Thunder way. That wasn't necessarily that they went out there and outplayed Indy. They got some of this, some of that, whatever. Last night, the Thunder just dominated the Pacers. And he's 100% correct.
You know, here's the thing. The starters for OKC came to play, and so did the bench. So, I mean, everybody was – I mean, that was a full team effort by Oklahoma, and Indiana didn't have that. They looked overwhelmed is what they did. This is what everyone projected that these finals would be. Game two was that.
So you're spot on, and I would add some depth to what you just said, because everything you just said is absolutely correct. Full team effort from Oklahoma City. But keep in mind, coming into this NBA Finals – I said, I think the Pacers can absolutely win this series if, and then I gave you my qualifiers. Usually, when a team is a big-time dog like the Pacers were, there are qualifiers to the situation. And so I added some qualifiers. One of the qualifiers that I added to the Pacers' ability to win this NBA Finals was that their bench had to be plus in the plus-minus. They're a team, and Indy has played under Rick Carlisle, I think, arguably, the best team basketball of any team in the NBA postseason. So their bench had to be better than the Thunder bench, and last night, they were not, and it wasn't particularly close. The bench of OKC last night was an overall plus minus. In fact, I went and I looked at it right before the show started. The guys that mattered, which are Alex Caruso, which are Isaiah Hartenstein, obviously getting moved to the bench, Kendrick Williams, Aaron Wiggins. I keep wanting to say Andrew Wiggins. Aaron Wiggins. Like, the guys that are the biggest role players were all plus minus. Williams was plus 15, Hartenstein was plus 17, Wiggins was plus 24, and also had five threes off the bench in this game. The Pacers are the team that are supposed to be able to lean on their bench. And I don't want to say like their bench played poorly. They got Mathurin for 14, they got McConnell for 11, but outside of that, Obi Toppin had 3 points in 19 minutes. He was 1 of 8 from the field. James Johnson had 2 points in this game. Thomas Bryant had 1 point in this game. Ben Shepherd had 3 points in this game. The Pacers bench was not ready. And there were some X's and O's that came into it. For instance, the fact that the Thunder switched their lineup a little bit, and the majority of the game, the Thunder were playing with a two big man set. The Thunder were playing with two bigs up front. Why? Because the Pacers killed them on the glass in game number one, which is not something you necessarily expect out of the Indiana Pacers. They don't win a bunch of games by out-rebounding you. And there were some folks that made the argument, and I don't think it's an incorrect argument, that the reason that the Pacers took game one was because they shockingly, although the numbers aren't wildly out of control, the context of the numbers are, it was not just winning on the glass. It was winning on the glass in the big moments. It was the moments where SGA was missing field goals he usually makes, and the Pacers were not giving second chance opportunities for him to get it right. It was the moments where the Pacers are on a run. They're on one of those 8, 9, 10, 12-point runs that they go on, because that is Pacers basketball. They were on one of those runs, and here comes a big three and a putback opportunity to kind of stop the bleeding a little bit, and the Pacers were earning the glass in that moment. Last night, the Thunder kind of changed that up a little bit. They were going with the two-man big front. They were putting in stretches that you ordinarily would not have Chet Holmgren out there, and he only played 28 minutes, but that's kind of the spot, is who he was on the floor for those 28 minutes with. Ordinarily, you're in spots where you would not have Chet Holmgren out there sharing minutes with Isaiah Hartenstein, right? You're not going to put a 7-footer off the bench to go out there and roll with a 7-1 starter. But they did that. They had some crossover minutes last night. And the Thunder, to me, as much as I have been saying all the way throughout this NBA postseason, one of the reasons that a lot of people, I think, slept on the Pacers, and frankly, slept on the Pacers in their breakdown to the NBA Finals before it started, was because we have all conditioned ourselves to look at the starters, to look at the bench players, to look at the players, and very rarely do you get much breakdown of the coaching staff. Very rarely is anybody going to come in and say, let's take a look at Carlisle and Dignall and talk about how these coaches counter each other. Rick Carlisle, in my opinion, is largely, not exclusively, but largely the reason that the Pacers are in the NBA Finals. I think Carlisle out-coached Tom Thibodeau in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think Rick Carlisle's out-coached everybody that he has faced down the run to the NBA Finals so far. I think at the point, though, there does come a point where talent can absolutely overcome coaching. Coaching can take less talent and put it above lesser coached, better talent. But when you got pretty good coaching for great talent, and I do not think, I've not shied away from, I don't think the Pacers on paper have the talent on the starting five or off the bench, the depth that the Oklahoma City Thunder have. But I think they can be coached around that. I think the gap is close enough they can be coached around that. And it felt to me like last night was probably the first time that the Pacers coaching was offset. Not necessarily the Thunder were better coached, but I think the Thunder did a good job of recognizing what the weaknesses were that cost them game number one, and changing that up. All right, they killed us on the glass, so we're going to overlap Chet and Isaiah. We're going to overlap our twin towers here. We're going to put them on the floor at the same time, and we're going to have at least 6, 7, 8, 10 minutes of basketball where we better get every rebound, right? Like, if I got 2 7-footers on the floor, and the best they have on the other side is Miles Turner, we better own whatever minutes we have both of the bigs on the floor. We better own the glass for that time. And last night, I thought that they did. Last night, the Pacers ended with 35 rebounds. The Thunder ended with 43. It's not a huge disparity, but when you place it into the context of what game one looked like, what the rebounding differential was in game one, which was a close game, obviously, the Halliburton dagger to win 111-110. I go back and look at that game. The Pacers had 56 rebounds in that game. The Thunder had 39. The differential was closed last, not just closed, overcome last night. Having 56 boards set the Pacers up for Tyrese Halliburton to have a historic moment. 56 boards was what they needed to make it a one-point game-winning dagger basketball game. They did not get it in game two. And because they did not get it in game two, it was a blowout. And as Zoe pointed out, and I think it's the best breakdown of game two that you're likely to hear. Game one, it felt like the Pacers, even when they were down 12 or 14 points, it felt like you could watch that game and in spots go, hey, if they clean that up, they're in this thing, right? Like if they, and then in the fourth quarter, Rick Carlisle had them clean these things up. Last night, it again, I watched the replay of the game this morning. I was asleep last night. So I had already read some stuff before I went into this. Last night, it felt to me like there was not a spot in that game that I was able to watch it and go, oh, if they clean that up, right? They were just getting dominated. The Pacers just got absolutely hammered last night, and that's not good enough. That's just not. So how much of that had to do with a feeling of desperation from the Thunder, right? How much of that had to do with the Thunder going, we can't go down two games. We go down two games and got to go back to Indiana. We are in a world of hurt. So they were playing desperate, A. Number two, I had on the Saturday show, a gentleman who covers the Thunder for Sports Illustrated on the show. And I said to him, I opened the interview with, have you recovered from the dagger that Tyrese put between the shoulder blades in game one? And he said, no, I have not. He said, but I think by the time we play game two tomorrow night, I think the team will have, but more importantly, I think the fans will have. I think by the time we get to, here's the comparison he gave to me before we went on the air that I think was spectacular because, you know, we all relate to things that impact us. He said, you know how you go out drinking one night? Maybe you got an Uber home because you imbibe a little bit more than you planned on. And then you wake up the next day, and in your 40s, because he's my age, he said in your 40s, you wake up the next day and you go, oh my God, I'm never drinking again. He said, you know how like a day or two later, you've committed to that, I'm never drinking again. And then you go somewhere and somebody's like, hey buddy, here's a free margarita. And you're like, all right, maybe I'll drink one more time. He said, it's kind of that. You had the hangover from Tyrese putting a dagger between your shoulder blades. He said, but by the time that we all get back into the Paycom Center on Sunday night, I fully expect it's going to feel like a big old cold ice margarita sitting down on the table. It's going to be time to go. And I think there was a little extra jet fuel in the building last night, and the Pacers just were not ready for that. So now they get to take it back to Indiana. And we have all talked about the fact that there is no distinct better home court advantage between these two teams, but there is a wonderful home team advantage for both teams. So the Pacers did themselves a huge favor by winning game one, because now it's a best of five, and the Pacers, even though game seven's in OKC, the Pacers technically have home court advantage for a five-game series. And if they approach it with that mentality, they get more time in front of a field house. I will say this, great one. They better win game three, because if they go down 2-1 coming into game four, it's going to be a lot more anxiety with game five back in OKC.
If they don't win game three, it's probably over.
I probably agree with that. All right, we're going to talk more about that. We'll get to some Stanley Cup talk, because the Panthers and the other team will be playing tonight. That's the Oilers. I'm being a smartass. Deck brought out the Florida kid on me on Saturday, and I haven't let it rest yet, all right? I get to talk some smack to some hockey folks. Speaking of hockey folks, got a big announcement for you coming up a little bit later on in the show. You want to stick around for that. The Rob Brown Show is live on your radio. Rob Alonso and you, it is the Fan Upstate.
Sp- Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show is here, and we knew on Friday night that Monday night morning was going to be a very interesting show because we learned on Friday that the House v. NCAA settlement was approved. Judge Claudia Wilkin said that the settlement terms brought back from the next round of discussions were good enough for her. Now, there are a couple of things we have to be aware of. The Go NIL or NIL Go, whatever it's called. I think it's NIL Go program is officially established by this settlement. The College Sports Commission, which is now the governing ruling body of the NCAA, is officially established. All these things are now in play. You may, however, want to hang on to that applause momentarily. And the reason you may want to hold on...
You're going
to
tell me they're not employees now?
No, that is not what I'm going to say.
Because that's why I'm cheering. Because now we can put all that away and all that. They're employees.
That is not why. And I do want to come back to ask you, I believe for the first time, why that is such a sticking point for you, but I'm going to come back to that. I don't want to get to that now. I want to actually take some time and delve into
that. I can't wait to be able to tell you why.
I look forward to it.
No, you don't.
No, I very much do. But what I want to get to now, because obviously now that the House settlement is approved, it's what's next. And the first thing is the appeals process. And the appeals process is going to be interesting. First, we don't know if anyone will appeal the ruling of the settlement. Now, the major parties at play obviously will not appeal the settlement because they agreed to the settlement. So it's unlikely that either the defendants, the NCAA, or the plaintiffs, the hundreds of whatever of former NCAA players who brought this case in the first place, it is unlikely that either of those two sides will appeal. But that does not mean that there is no one else out there that will appeal. Schools, obviously, are going to be massively financially impacted by this. There are going to be NIL collectives out there that are going to be, theoretically, replaced, eliminated by this, and we'll come to why here in just a few minutes. Will any collective say, no, we still want to be able to do our thing? Like, we've put all the work into being a thing, and because we have put all the work into being a thing, we would like to continue our work as a thing. Maybe some of them appeal. There may be some players that appeal, some active players that appeal and say, actually, while the revenue distribution is good, because there are some other elements of this that have to go into play. The concept at its core is that collectives will go away and be replaced by the revenue sharing, which is $20.5 million this upcoming season, will increase by 3% and be reevaluated every 3 years. Now, there's a good reason for that, because if the income generated by the college football playoffs, if the income generated by conference and individual schools broadcasting deals, by ticket sales, by merch, if the revenue goes up every year for the schools and does so at a rate that is higher than 3% year by year, then there is a very good chance that the parties involved, the College Sports Commission, will at some point come back and say, all right, revenue went up by 4.5%, so we're actually going to increase the revenue sharing this year by 4.5% of that $20.5 million. So as all of those deals have to be put into place by the schools moving forward, you may see some active players that ultimately decide to appeal. There is an appeals process. It does not mean it will or will not be utilized, but there is, to my understanding, and I am not a lawyer, nor did I stay in a Holiday Inn Express last night, there is a 30-day window for an appeal to be filed, but an appeal of itself does not mean that all the terms of the House v. NCAA settlement will come to a grinding halt as far as the implementation now that we are inside of 90 days to the start of college football. A stay of the appeal is what would create a halt on House v. NCAA settlement activities coming to a conclusion. There can be an appeal with a stay, which means they would go, okay, no distribution of revenue. The schools would still have to put their revenue sharing into an escrow account if they opt in, because schools are not obligated to revenue share. But obviously, it's probably going to be tough to recruit for a high-level school if you say, we are not going to be revenue sharing with our athletes. And of course, obviously, schools now have to figure out, and this is the part I'm very interested in, because I've considered this, but not heavily. There's another angle of that, which is schools have $20.5 million, but that's across the board. That's all athletics. And we all tend to, fair enough, it's the big thing around here, we all tend to think about college football. But I got to wonder, are there maybe some schools out there, maybe even Power Four schools, that go, you know what? We at Wake Forest are likely never going to be a big-time player in the college football world. You know where we are a big-time player? In the baseball world. So what if we take of that $20.5 million, a large percent of it, and put it into baseball and softball? And let's become the baseball powerhouse of our conference. Let's go to Omaha every year. What if some schools, what if a Duke, who has seen a lot of progress and trend upward in their football program, but what if a Duke says, you know what? We're never going to be a power player. Our best years in the ACC football, we check in at 8-4, 7-5. We check in third in the ACC. You know what we're going to do? We're going to take our $20.5 million and we're going to throw the majority of it at basketball, men's and women's basketball. And we're going to make sure we stay on top no matter what conference we end up in. We're going to make sure that we are a March Madness presence every year because we get the best of the best because we put the money from our revenue sharing there. There's a lot of activity that needs to be dealt with school by school. There is also the concept that has to be dealt with of how are we splitting it where it is Title IX compliant. There's like all these things that schools have to figure out, all these things that conferences have to figure out now that this is in place, and all of them have to figure it out under the watchful eye of the College Sports Commission. But, and this is where it gets interesting, none of that comes into play if an appeal is filed and a stay of the settlement is put into place because of that appeal. There can be an appeal without a stay, But there has to be an appeal to be a stay. And if a stay is pushed down, then none of these things start happening. And there's a 30-day window. So now, the month of June and the first week of July become big time. Because if anybody decides, and all it takes is one player, one party, one entity, one group of players perhaps, being talked to by a lawyer who feels like there's a little more money to be gained in this to go, hey, why don't you, tell you what, you decide to file the appeal, I'll do everything on your behalf, and somebody somewhere files that appeal and does so to the Circuit Appeals Court in a way that they go, not only do we accept this appeal and put it into process, but we're going to put a stay of the decision down too. And then everybody's got to push pause again. And what we've talked about, and in just a little over 2 hours, when we are joined by John Blau of the Post and Courier, who has been a valuable voice in the discussion as far as keeping us all informed, especially how it's going to impact Clemson moving forward. We'll ask John Blau about this too. But I think at this point, it basically comes down to, is there an appeal filed? Is the appeal strong enough that there is a stay of the decision filed as well, which puts everything on hold for this entire conversation? And if those things happen, then what comes next? I'm not saying, I don't know if there will be or won't be an appeal. I don't know if an appeal will be filed that is suitable for a stay of the decision. And again, I will acknowledge that I am talking about all of this with a maybe slightly above baseline understanding of the legal process as far as how a multi-billion dollar settlement works. But the understanding that I have developed since this decision got made on Friday night is that we now enter the appeals process window. It's about a month long, and the window will determine if there is an appeal, obviously, and if a stay is attached, which would then push the pause button on all of this going into action. If we get to the end of the first week of July and there is no appeal and there is no stay, then welcome to the new era of college sports. Now, I am going to, I think, I'm going to pose a challenge to schools. And I do not think is it a challenge that they will be capable of rising to. But I'm going to pose a challenge because it will be the mentality of the schools and the conferences that determine if, right? We've heard Dabo. All he wants guidelines. All he wants protocols, rules, regulations. We've heard Dabo say that explicitly. Right now there's no rules. We're just looking for rules and guidelines. And I accept that as true.
Yeah, how come you haven't mentioned back pay yet?
Well, because the billions, $2+ billion in back pay are something that there's a process for. It's going to a big account. It's going to
them. Do you think that filters down to D3?
As far as the schools having to pitch in?
It's paying back pay for all the people who have played before.
I actually have to, and I actually have it in my email to do this. I actually have to dive into that back pay system.
I just want to know if I'm going to get some money. That's all. That's all I care about.
As you did not sign your name onto the House NCAA settlement.
Oh, man.
You probably could have.
Well, you know, sometimes you don't open your mail.
That's probably fair. All right, when we come back, I have a challenge for every individual school and every individual conference. It is a challenge that I do not think they will be able to rise to, but it is a challenge that if they do rise to, we will successfully enter a new era of college sports. I can answer the question before it's asked. Can the schools and the conferences live up to it? I'll tell you what the challenge is next. Rob Lonzo and you, The Rob Brown Show, dropping banger after banger here on the Fan Upstate.
Mm-hmm. Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I'm going to issue a challenge to every single Power Four school and conference. And frankly, I do not think that it is a challenge that they will be capable of living up to. But it is a challenge that if they are capable of living up to it, I honestly think this House v. NCAA settlement can fix college sports. All the complaints that so many of you all have had over the past couple of years, I think, could be squashed if the schools will live up to this challenge. The challenge is very simple. Follow the rules. That's it. Just follow the... You have been asking for rules for a very long time. In fact, it was not even but a week ago that Dabo Swinney, now he was talking about the transfer portal at the time, but he said, and I quote, "There are no rules right now. We just want some rules. I think we're coming out of a period of complete chaos and where there's no cap." And where the schools can't handle things directly, it comes from outside entities. You have the agent process. It's not regulated. I mean, there's a lot of challenges, but I do think we're about to enter into a much more structured environment that is going to, it might take a year, but I think it's going to create some markets to where there'll be some transparency. There's an actual cap. I think the best thing about this settlement is it keeps college football scholastic, end quote. Now, we can put all the fluff aside. The concept of what Dabo had to say here was, we want some rules. He effectively said, in terms of rules, we have no rules, and we just want some rules. Well, they're here now. The rules that you have asked for are now here, or at least they're on the table. They have been put forward. There is now also in the College Sports Commission a outside third party that is going to be leaned on as both the creative force behind the rules and the enforcement arm of the NCAA to make sure that those rules are followed in good faith across the board. And one of the things that we have talked about is that there is a proposed and drafted document that is being requested for schools to sign that basically says, we are happy with the rules as they are written. And because we are happy with the rules as they are written, should the College Sports Commission find that we, the school, have violated any of these rules, and should, in an arbitration process, because arbitration is the preferred and leaned upon method of discipline by this commission, should, via arbitration, it be found that our school violated any of these rules, we waive our right to sue the NCAA or the College Sports Commission for injury. We waive the ability to say we disagree with the enforcement of this rule, so we're going to take you to court and try to win so that we can do whatever we want. Now, the reason this is so big is because if the schools and the conferences sign that drafted proposal and say that's on, they're on board with it and they waive the right to sue should they be found liable in arbitration of rules violations. If every school is willing to follow the letter of the rules put in place, the guidelines, the protocols, whatever you want to call them, as Dabo Swinney specifically requested last week, if every school is willing to follow the established rules and guidelines, I think we're in a good place. Now, why do I think they'll fail? Because they've literally never done that before, right? Literally never done that before. In years gone by, colleges, universities, schools, and conferences have searched for every little competitive advantage that they could give themselves within themselves. If there was ever a point in time that, let's say, Michigan thought that they could push the envelope a little bit to gain an advantage over Ohio State, they were going to do it. Because they also felt like, if we do it, and if the NCAA comes down on our heads over it, we have the ability to take them in front of a court and say, actually, you're hamstringing us a little bit here. You are preventing us from doing a thing that we should be able to do in order to make the most money that we can make. And more often than not, they win, right? So they have always searched for that competitive advantage. What if I told you, and this is something that Greg Sankey got real heated about at the SEC spring meetings 2 weeks ago. Remember the conversation when Brett Yormark, the commissioner of the Big 12, came out, and he, along with a couple of other folks within the Big 12, circulated a letter. It was a press release disguised in the form of a letter where they effectively said the SEC and the Big 10, as the two primary forces in college athletics moving forward, Brett Yormark said they have a responsibility, like Uncle Ben said, with great power comes great responsibility. They have a responsibility to act in a way that is beneficial to and in the best interest of college sports, not the Big Ten, not the SEC, college sports at large for everybody. That was the argument. And Sankey came out in the SEC spring meetings at one of his commissioner's media availabilities, and he was heated about it, that press release got out. He said, and I quote, "I don't need lectures about the best interest of college sports," which, yeah, I think you do. I think no matter who you are, whether you're the president or you're the king or you're the emperor or you're the czar or the chairperson or the committee head or whatever, anyone that is in a position of ultimate authority over any entity, to me, should always be willing to listen to the people that they govern. I think one of the biggest problems in politics right now is the number of folks in Washington, D.C., or Columbia, South Carolina, or whatever, that don't listen to the people that they actually govern. They just go, this is what I think is best, we're going to do that. But Sankey got absolutely heated about it. And I think the reason he got heated about it was because, to some degree, I think Greg Sankey felt a little bit called out. Now, I understand Greg Sankey's job is not to do stuff that's in the betterment of college sports. Greg Sankey's job is to do what's for the betterment of the Southeastern Conference exclusively. However, I would make the argument, though, is it not better for the Southeastern Conference if college sports is at its best? If there is a nationwide appeal to this particular thing that you are a part of? Isn't that better for everybody? So it would make sense to me, and again, maybe I'm wrong on this. Maybe there's some number, data, storyline, anecdote, soundbite to prove me wrong. But if it is good for the SEC that college sports nationally is strong, the national interest stays up. Because if the national interest stays up, people are tuning into TV. TV deals produce the most revenue. You get more revenue back. So if you subscribe to that philosophy, then it would be in the best interest of the Southeastern Conference not to make every decision under the guise of what happens or what's the best thing for our conference right now, but what's best for everybody long term. Because if it's best for everybody long term, you have more people interested, more people interested, more people watching, more revenue coming in because of it. But it is not just them. It is also the schools within the conference. If North Carolina State is looking at the new rules, regulations, and guidelines put into place by the NCAA and the College Sports Commission moving forward, and they go, you know what? North Carolina's got Bill Belichick now. And with that is going to come a lot of renewed interest in their program. So we are going to try to go around these new rules in this particular way. And I'm not going to come up with a hypothetical about how they do it because there's 100,000 of them. But if they go, we're going to try to skirt the rules over here so we can keep up with North Carolina. And every school is doing that. Michigan's doing it to catch up with Ohio State. Florida's doing it to catch up with Georgia. Florida State's doing it to keep up with, I guess, Wake Forest. I don't know. They were 2-10. Shut up. If every school is looking for ways, as they have always done, to skirt the rules, to find ways around the protocol, and say, we will fight against it if we get caught and get in trouble, then all of this work that went into getting these rules that Dabo Swinney was asking for, these guidelines put into place that every coach has been absolutely begging for the past couple of years, none of it will matter. We'll just go right back to where we were. So the biggest challenge on the table, now that the House v. NCAA settlement has been resolved, is that every school within every conference and every conference needs to be able to look each other in the eye, school to school within a conference, conference to conference across the board, and say, we have these rules, these regulations, these guidelines. They've put programs into place. How do we monitor NIL? Well, there's a system now. This NIL Go system. It is a system put in place so that revenue distribution can be tracked school to school, so that collectives can't just go bananas anymore. And any outside NIL. So if Caitlin Clark gets a deal with State Farm for $250,000, to hang out with Jake, she will go to this platform and she will upload that deal. And that allows the school to check the contract and go, this is fair, it's within the rules. The conferences to check these NIL contracts and go, it's fair, within the rules. And the NCAA to look and say, it's fair, it's within the rules. Now, we are at a point where there is a little bit of muddy here. There's a lot of statements that are relatively vague. One of the things that will be checked by this NIL Go platform, for instance, is a referendum for every outside NIL deal. It is a referendum that says, is this payment fair? Is it justifiable? And is it a fair amount of compensation for the athletes? And the justification behind that is, what they do not want is a situation where, and I'm going to hypotheticalize here, they don't want a situation where there's a five-star quarterback out there and a five-star running back, five-star, like the best four skill position players, and let's say Nike, who of course Phil Knight, their owner, big Oregon guy, Oregon, and the reason I'm using Nike is because Phil Knight has repeatedly said, I do not want to get into individual NIL deals in a way that I feel like I'm manipulating the market. I think Phil Knight's been very fair about this. But let's say theoretically tomorrow he goes, you know what, screw that, I want to win every national championship for a year. And Nike, sitting on billions and billions of dollars, starts looking and they go, all right, we are going to go pay $10 million to a high school quarterback who's a five-star and a high school running back who's a five-star and a receiver who's a five-star, and we're going to take all these five-star kids and put together a billion-dollar NIL class and bring them to Oregon under the current regulations and guidelines. That can be done.
You've said multiple times what is fair. Who decides what's fair? Because what's fair for me may not be fair for you.
So that is one of the things that I was about to drive at. That's the vagary I'm talking about. And this has to be determined. And I don't know how it's going to be. And if there is an appeal and if there is a stay put into place because of this appeal, this feels like one of those areas that might drive that. Who the hell gets to decide what fair compensation is? If Nike looks at a kid, a five-star kid in the transfer portal, and says, we're going to pay that kid $10 million to come to Oregon to wear Nike and to rep the Ducks, then what is going to be the formula, the process by which the NCAA looks at that and goes, yeah, we don't think that kid's worth $10 million. We don't think that kid's worth that much money. This is an unfair competitive payment. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know that anybody knows the answer to that. The people in power are obviously going to say, well, we know the answer to that. But this whole thing was put into place by the fact that the people in the power have always said, we think this is fair. And the people that don't have the power go, no, we don't agree with that at all. And now we want to challenge that. And they want a settlement because of it. So there are some vagaries that will have to be solved down the line. And I know that because I went this morning as I was getting ready for the show. The College Sports Commission website is officially up and launched. I found it this morning. And I went and looked. And on the front page, the homepage of their website, there's two blocks of text. Up at the top, it says, here's the new system, and this is what we're going to do. And in the middle of the website, which is where you should have all your information, it says this. I'm going to read you the quote, and then we're going to break. It says, and I quote, this website lays out the new system in place overseen by the College Sports Commission to facilitate revenue sharing in college sports and to ensure that name, image, and likeness deals made between student athletes and third parties are fair and comply with the rules. And that's all that's on the website. Now, in fairness, it just got officialized Friday and kicked off this morning. But the fact that they knew this was coming, the terms of the settlement, and on Monday morning when the eyes of the nation were going to go say, okay, what the hell is the College Sports Commission? You go to their website, and that is literally all the information they give you. That's all it says on their website. We have got a lot of ground to cover, but the settlement is settled, and we are ready to start doing that work. Now it's how do we take the vagaries and start to pinpoint specifics of what's okay and not okay. That's going to be the work of the next couple of years. The work of the next 60 seconds is Lonzo's.
By the way, for those asking, vagary is a word.
I know it is.
Officialized, I don't think that's a word.
It also is.
And settled, not a word.
Definitely not.
The NBA Finals are tied at a game apiece after a 123-107 win for the Oklahoma City Thunder last night. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had 34 with 8 assists, and Jalen Williams added 19. Alex Caruso scored 20. And Aaron Wiggins got 18 with 5 made threes. The Atlanta Braves were swept by the Giants with a 4-3 loss yesterday. Spencer Strider won 6 innings, giving up all 4 runs and striking out in all 3 games. The Braves gave up a lead, including leading twice yesterday. The Braves started 3-game set at Milwaukee tonight. Edmonton and Florida face off tonight at 8 for Game 3 of the NHL Stanley Cup Finals, this time in Sunrise, Florida. After a double overtime win in Game 2, the Florida Panthers are favorites to take a series lead, entering the contest as a -140 betting favorite.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts.
Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.